Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Ron Hagen, and we're going to dive into an issue that's shrouded in some mystery for human resources executives and other managers of retirement plans. In the two decades that I've been coaching, consulting, and writing about the operational and risk management challenges that are fixed in the fiduciary role, my inbox has received thousands of inquiries, and none are more interesting to me than those that come from what I call professional fiduciaries. These are people who are executives and human resources managers who sit on oversight committees for employee benefit plans. They can be called benefit plan committees, retirement plan committees, and investment committees. And over the years, they've sent me some fascinating and at times perplexing questions. And so today I thought we'd examine a frequently occurring question about the conduct of a benefit plan committee, what it's intended to accomplish, and how to sustain one. Well, the first question I get often is it necessary or is it a legal requirement to form a committee to oversee a retirement plan? Well, the rules that define the conduct standards for those people who manage employers' retirement plans don't mandate the formation of a committee to oversee the plans. But the growing complexity of managing plans like 401ks, 403bs, and defined benefit type plans has led to a widespread adoption by prudent enterprises of an oversight committee approach. Employers have come to realize that a team made up of internal managers and outside experts has the best chance of satisfying all of the disciplines or the skill sets that are defined in ERISA's fiduciary standards of care. Incidentally, those disciplines have been broken down into categories called governance, administration, investments, and controls. A high level of proficiency in these skills is really vital, and a properly established and functioning fiduciary committee ensures that each discipline receives its proper focus. It also helps to ensure that information gaps are closed, those gaps that exist between the knowledge of the fiduciaries on the plan and the vendors, for example. It also helps reduce the risk of lawsuits and regulatory fines by ensuring that the conduct of the fiduciaries is documented to be prudent. So in summary, a fiduciary committee is not required by law, but it certainly today is an essential best practice. Another question I get often is, what range of topics then should a fiduciary committee be expected to address? Well, to start off with, a committee should have an internal code of procedures, and those procedures should be defined in a committee charter. A charter is a founding document that assists committees in establishing and maintaining effective governance going forward. A charter will help define the kinds of topics, at least by general category, that the committee is going to be expected to evaluate and make decisions regarding. For example, many employers are choosing to delegate the role of the plan administrator as defined under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. The committee is becoming, in many cases, the plan administrator. Well, if the committee charter defines the committee to be the plan administrator, then that committee occupies the highest level of fiduciary responsibility that's defined in federal regulations. So a charter is essential in defining the range of topics that a committee is going to be empowered to evaluate. And that would naturally include all four of the disciplines that we just referred to a moment ago of governance, administration, investments, and controls. Well, another question I receive often is, where are the governance rules for plans organized under ERISA actually defined? Where can they be found? How can a retirement plan committee member know exactly what ERISA requires? Well, ERISA only requires that every employee benefit plan be established and maintained according to a written instrument. That's the so-called plan document. Plan document is effectively the governance structure for a retirement plan. ERISA also requires that the rules for operating a qualified plan be communicated to employees. Another document then that's used to do that is called the Summary Plan Description Document, or the SPD. The SPD is required to be distributed to plan participants within 90 days of their becoming a participant. Now, while not codified in federal regulation, a written investment policy statement has emerged as almost a mandatory governance document in the eyes of the Employee Benefits Security Administration. That's the division of the DOL, which enforces ERISA. So the plan document, the SPD, and the IPS collectively define the rules by which regulators and the courts use to evaluate whether fiduciaries satisfy their duties. So it's imperative that retirement plans align tightly with the rules published in their own governance documents. The failure to do so becomes a challenge if questions are asked about whether a fiduciary group is performing its job prudently. Well, going back to the committee charter for just a moment, here's a question that appears frequently as well. What should a committee charter include? And I guess the best way to answer that question is to summarize what I think are 10 topics that should be addressed fully in a benefit plan or retirement plan committee charter. First of all, who should the members be? When setting up an investment committee, members are most often and should be senior management personnel from the enterprise's business units, including areas like human resources, finance, and operations. Now, what are the prerequisites then for membership? There is no specific job title or experience required for an effective committee member, or even for a new committee member, which is a bit unfortunate. There are many individuals who are assigned the job of sitting on their employer's fiduciary committee who don't have training for the role and enter that job with whatever kinds of perspectives and biases and understandings they have about the job they think they've been called on to perform. So it's really important that members of committees and the committee charter itself, dictate and expect that retirement plan investment committee members are going to have some level of training in fiduciary responsibilities. And every member should be educated at least on the basics of ERISA, including what it expects of fiduciaries in terms of loyalty, prudence, and what ERISA calls exclusive purpose. Another component of the charter would be a definition of the size of the committee. Membership runs between 5 and 7 members. Any more than 7, it becomes difficult to get anything accomplished in most meetings with as many members as that, because it is expected that members are going to contribute. And it's been my experience that more than 7 or so people on a committee make it difficult to maintain an efficient meeting agenda. Frequency of meetings should be scheduled quarterly. There was a time, 10 or 15 years ago, when committees would meet semi-annually or annually, but only the smallest of retirement plans should meet any less frequently than every quarter. As far as a committee structure is concerned, it's best to appoint a chairman, a chairperson to run the meeting, and a secretary who is going to keep effective minutes. And I can't emphasize the importance of maintaining effective meeting minutes. As we sift through the results of litigation against retirement plan sponsors nowadays, the meeting minutes become an absolutely essential place to go to evidence prudence, which of course is ERISA's most significant requirement of those who serve in a fiduciary capacity. Formalizing the committee is also critical. It's essential, in my opinion, that the board of directors of an organization actually authorize and appoint the committee, and that the committee be set up in such a way as it is governed by charter or bylaws. Members of the committee should acknowledge their fiduciary status in writing. For those members who rotate on and off a committee, it's important to designate the date that they join the committee. It's also important for their benefit that they have notification and meeting minutes of the date that they rotate off the committee. And then consistency is absolutely essential. An agenda should follow each meeting, and in order to provide a consistent way of reviewing key items and the development of meeting minutes to document the procedure. So follow these guidelines that we've just summarized, and you'll be able to prove your diligence serving as a trusted steward of your employees' retirement and health plan assets. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Excellent Fiduciary Podcast. To learn more, visit us at rolandchris.com. Have a good day.